Hi, good evening. My name's Jack Hurd, and for the next 4 weeks on Wednesday night in the 7 o'clock hour, I will be conducting a reading of a manuscript I wrote called In Search of Intuition in Three Acts. The final week will be the epilogue. You can find the text online at jackhurd.org. And I think that it should explain itself beyond that pretty well. So I'm going to ask Solomon, the host of K-Chung, to read this introductory text, the context piece.
Oh. I was first introduced to intuition in an essay by a New York-based artist named Eva Heisler. Her essay, Things Without Words, was commissioned by the Living Art Museum in Iceland for a project based on the collection there. It was the first and only time that this edition of Intuition had been given any context in the museum's history. Heisler's rediscovery of the work was also her introduction to it. She addressed intuition as a prime example of the flotsam and jetsam of the collection, something that, through projects like Heisler's, the museum has been dealing with on and off for years. Intuition looks as though another work might as well be stored in it, were it not for two pencil lines, the word intuition and the signature of its author, the famous artist Joseph Beuys. I knew next to nothing about Beuys or this work, even though the word intuition seemed strange and foreign to me. I treated it with a curious skepticism. The Living Art Museum was not doing much better. It seemed like the perfect place to start. What follows is the transcription of an interview with Berta Gudjonsdottir, who was at the time chairman of the board and managing director of the Living Art Museum. She, like everyone in Iceland, was still reeling in the wake of the financial crisis that crippled the country in 2008. The small nation was so disrupted by the collapse of its major banks that the next step, politically, was to elect an assembly of citizens to rewrite the Constitution. In all other arenas, the next step was ominously unknown.
Okay, so I wrote down a lot of things, and I don't think I need to ask you all of them. So I guess because the work is called Intuition, I am interested. I interpret that word to be two different things, really. Or maybe before I tell you what I think it means, do you have some, maybe just a definition of the word itself, or as it applies to the piece?
I don't know. I couldn't really comment on relations to the piece. It would just be my own assumptions based on basically nothing. I don't really know it.
But then maybe just an idea, the idea of intuition, because it's such a vague word, especially in English and as it translates to someone who speaks English as a second language. What does it mean?
What does it mean? Well, to me, I think it's quite a strong word. Actually, not at all vague. It's basically quite strong. It's quite a strong force, but maybe it is quite easy to disregard it as a force and not to be able to use it as a force or as a tool. So it is like a force you need to train the use of, decide that you want to use it. Linguistically, I think it's called ins in Icelandic. It means seeing within or something like that, insight. The Icelandic translation is pretty good. It describes it pretty well. Looking to your inside, listening to your own voice, or something like that. Basically, communicating with your subconscious.
Insight we also have, but it's not like sight, like seeing. I think it's more like sight, like space. I think that's how it's spelled, or at least that's how I've always thought of it. But for me, the idea of intuition, I think it's got these two meanings that are in some ways similar but paradoxical, because both, like, maybe what you're describing, like a woman's intuition, you just sort of know and it comes from inside. Your feelings about something are your intuition, but you can also intuit something, which is like to understand it without it being explained. You just like know what this other thing is, and that comes from something outside of yourself being very, very stable. Whereas the other thing is about everything outside of yourself being very unstable and your own insight being what brings meaning to it. So it's almost the paradox that I think is the most interesting thing about the work, that Boyce designed these boxes to sort of spread his ideology and describe a message and communicate really largely. But then on the other hand, it's such a simple object, and it's so vague, and it's so empty and so ready to be filled up with something that it must be interpreted intuitively differently by different people.
Yeah, and definitely in retrospect, maybe even more so than at the time when he actually makes the work and is there himself to kind of, I don't know if he monitored how they spread, but it also changes the whole kind of intuition element of it, the work per se.
I guess I want to be scientific about things sometimes and have control to things I do. So the box is this uniform object that exists in all these different places. So I wanted to use it to address some kind of cultural history or art history in the space that it ended up. When I talked to Ingelfer, I talked to him mostly about the art scene in the 60s and what was going on here, because he was a student at the time, and if he remembered seeing the work or it had some influence on him or it changed the direction of Iceland. He told me a lot about Iceland being influenced a lot by international travel and people not being able to get a master's degree here and going elsewhere to go to school. And when they finished coming back, that it was like a hub here for all sorts of stuff. And Magnus talked to me a lot about the Fluxus movement and outsider art. I was thinking that in particular seems to have always been a pretty big part of the scene, even though it's also called, or it's still called, outsider art. I guess I'm trying to get a sense of, with this work being here and almost lost in the archive a few years ago, when people started doing research and Boyce being such a German icon, and so specifically German, and that stereotype of rigor, and I guess if some of that is lost here, if that accuracy in making a very specific history is sort of lost here, like if the museum cares, like maybe a more intuitive approach towards understanding objects as they move through history is more valuable in some way?
Well, it's hard to say. Anything that I could comment on is really personal. You know, in a museum, the board takes so much. They don't have direction. There is no continued story. The only continued history within a museum is its existence. Everything else, all the activity has taken place just according to totally different directions of the board each time. So there's no direction, even the rules for what to collect. You know, in later years, some works that were donated had been refused, actually, and in the beginning, there were rules that members should donate so and so many works per year. All these things have been changing, and the direction for the program has been changing everything. So it's really impossible for me or for someone 5 or 10 or 15 years ago to, as a director of the museum, speak on behalf of the museum. It's a really strange thing about it, you know? So I have no idea. My predecessor would have answered completely differently, because at that time, the situation was totally different. All in all, this board, which has, by the way, been working for a year now together, has seen it as important to base their program and their activity on this registration cataloging system. But the board before us had an even stronger vision of it, and the board before them were absolutely not interested at all. So, you know, you see the dilemma of trying to answer. The museum thinks this and that. It's just impossible to do, really. And also, I think it's really not a country. It's not of general interest. I wouldn't be able to say, really, that there's a general interest on behalf of artists our age today in Iceland to take care of the history. It's really not. It's down to a dozen people or something. I don't know how many. We're also pretty criticized at the same time. On one hand, for 2 or 3 years, there's been a strong sense of importance to attend to the collection and the archive. But the same board has also been criticized for dwelling too long on it or spending too much time, and also spending less time on creating enough room for younger artists. So it's also like this, and we have no idea how far we're really going to bring this. Something might come up with the building, for example. I mean, we're not anticipating it, but anything can happen, you know. Something might come up and we might have to move out for a year or something, and maybe during this year the works will have to be put in storage somewhere else and this chapter will be over. The next board would again not be interested, so it really can change so quickly. It's difficult to answer, unless really I'm answering on a personal note.
Well, that's very interesting. I hadn't even thought about that because everybody else I've talked to hasn't been speaking for anybody. So everybody does just respond on a personal note, you know. This is what I thought this was about, and this is what my friend said. Magnus talked a lot about, like, that friendship is really important in art, and that what he wanted to do and what his friends wanted to do was a sort of what ended up getting done, I guess. And I think generally across the board, bureaucracy aside, these personal opinions do determine things. So I'm happy to have you answer on behalf of yourself if you don't want to do that.
Yeah, no problem. I just want to make a distinction because I really don't want to speak on behalf of the institution when I'm really not doing that. When my other 4 board members would totally disagree, I can't, just because everybody, the whole scene, knows that isn't so. If you spoke to the director of the National Gallery, he'd be able to answer like that, because there's been a policy that's been created, which is a stable policy, and here we don't have that. But what was the question?
I guess I have a hope that over time and distance, as the work moved from Dusseldorf to here, that it would change somehow. And whatever Boy's original intention had been for it would somehow be affected by that time and distance. I don't know if that's true or not, and I don't know if you could necessarily say, as somebody that's not particularly familiar with the work, but do you think that an accuracy in representing things and maintaining the original idea is the most important thing for you to be doing, or seeing how it can be reinterpreted in that place, in the place that it is now?
I think both are important. To keep close, or to keep the information that you have there, to keep it close to the work at each time, for this work and others. But of course we don't have this information, which is probably why the work had not been, because the work has not been researched, it has not been presented, really. And it goes for many other works here. We're taking phase two for this institution, to look more into the history of each work, or each body of works, or so, of an artist. It's just not been done too much through the years. I think it's important to do both. I think every artist would like his or her work to be interpreted in the time and the context, and personally, in each time it's presented. And if there is a history, like there is for this work here and so many others, I think it needs to be included in the presentation for sure. Because I have to read the significance of the piece through that. Otherwise, it's just a box. I think that must be the thought on behalf of the artist, but otherwise it is just a box. Like, just like contemporary art, history is just a box without the history. I think both are important.
It's funny that you say that just now is the time for that archiving, because I've been getting the impression, or it seems to me, that a lot of people are feeling that way now, especially this new Abramovich show in New York City. It was a pretty big deal in the United States, and certainly was a big part of my life in a certain way. Cataloging and getting retrospective for that sort of performance work, and trying to archive and set it in stone for her and all of these Fluxus artists whose work was really ephemeral at the time it was made. It seems like a pretty huge trend right now. Do you have any sense why?
Yeah, well, I've given it some thought. Not only locally, like you say, there seems to be something happening in the Western world. We've been through a time where emphasis has been put on production so much, whether it's artistic production or any kind of production. I think it is a time for... People have been seeing it coming, sort of, this time for a reflection, I guess. A time to look for our roots or a base, looking for a history. I think it's something that has been happening in Europe. I can't say so much about the States. Certain things, maybe in New York, but I don't know about the West Coast, for instance. I think it goes hand in hand with an air of self-reflection, because I think this is quite a strong time of self-reflection. I think people have been going out of Orient in a race against time and a race for financial growth and eventual debt. And now people are tired of it, abused and used by the system and the race. I see it in direct connection with the financial crisis. For instance, this process and so many other processes like this are looking into summarizing history somehow. In the last, well, not only a couple of years, in the last decade, I really see it in connection with stuff, this self-reflection from this super capitalistic era. It must be complete.
Maybe people are trying to remember those things that happened in the 60s that were more, you know.
Yeah, I know. Locally, for example, people are... Well, the roots that people are looking for here go much deeper, much further in time. They go back to before World War II, for example, which was the construct of a great new beginning locally. I mean, every country has its own turning point, whether it's the Second World War for Europe, or it's Berlin Wall, or that significant period of change.
What was the period here, the change? Because Iceland wasn't all that involved in the Second World War, was it?
Well, everyone was involved, of course. Keep that clear. But yeah, with the island being midway between Europe and the States, it was used as a base. The Americans built up a base, a military base.
Oh, so the occupation, well, I call it that. I don't know how you...
Yeah, it's an occupation.
Although the Cold War, 50s era, that began in the Second World War?
Yeah.
So is it like an Americanization or an internationalism that you think is the new trend and you're going back to a time that was more isolationist or something like that?
Definitely Americanization and then globalization, of course, was a softer, another phase, which was maybe not as dramatic, but effective. You see, Iceland joining EFTA and joining Schengen and signing free trade agreements, and you know, now you have the possibility of moving anywhere and working anywhere in Europe. This is also a pretty big change. I mean, without it, Iceland would probably not be bankrupt right now. But also without it, we would not be or have been as much of a participant in et cetera. Well, who knows?
Well, a big part of this for me came from the fact that Boies had all of these big ideas about internationalism. He started the Free International University, and he wanted to create this global social network. And I think that his attempt to make all these additions, 12,000 of the boxes, and spread them out across the world, was an attempt to spread this message of some sort of global unity. But that sense of homogeneity in 2010 is not really particularly appealing to me, at least, and maybe also to Iceland, which is sort of realizing that involvement in these international markets. So is there something about me coming here from the United States to ask about a European artist that's a little like, oh, that's not really what we want to do right now?
Oh, no. I don't think it matters, really. I think it's really our generation, for example, has become so used to, you know, you're not really too occupied with where you are from and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you are up to a point, but it doesn't change a lot since you assume that most people you meet in Europe, for instance, have some experience outside of their home turf. So I don't think that's any kind of a factor or any more strange than a Chinese artist coming to ask about boys would be. But on the other hand, I think you're right. People here are quite concerned about flattening out. And that's one of the subjects that comes up in terms of making the decisions of whether or not Iceland should join the EU committee, which is the big question hanging over the country. not only for the past 2 years, but for the past decade. It's really a ruling factor for every act of politics. And a lot of that is fear about farming getting too regulated. But on the other hand, if you go to the countryside in Iceland, you don't find farmers, like in almost every other country, making their own cow product because there's been too much regulation.
Already?
Already. It's just been local monopolizing. It's not been about the EU at all. If you're a farmer who milks cows, you have to milk these cows and sell the milk. You are legally not able to from your own farm. You have to bring the milk all the way to a dairy somewhere. They're spread around, but there aren't that many, and petrol all the way there and back. So the farmers are actually gaining very little. Up until a certain point, organic and non-organic were just mixed together. There was no distinction made between. Since they've abolished this, of course, so the whole thing is regulated from a
central bureaucracy.
Yeah, exactly. So that's not really that big of a change, but that's the kind of thing that people are afraid of, these specialties fading away. I think it's important for each country to realize what is important to keep and what you can keep. But I think it's the same here as anywhere. Everywhere you have these certain things that identify a nation or a region.
Yeah, that I guess is slipping away from everybody.
Right. I think it's happening more here than somewhere else. It's just a general concern.
It's sort of the concern that got me started with this project in the first place.
Well, I think people are generally quite concerned here. Something that's been going on in politics for the last, well, two decades, things that you never thought you could lose, you can actually lose them. I think people are sensing a real danger about fundamental elements.
Maybe we can leave it here. It's sort of foreboding.
Thank you, guys. That was Act One of In Search of Intuition in Three Acts. I hope you enjoyed it. And I encourage anybody who's listening to listen again next week at the same time, Wednesday at 7, for Act Two, where we'll be going to Dusseldorf, Germany, to speak with Johannes Stutgen. And thanks for tuning in. This is Jack Hurd saying goodnight.